We present Billy Whitelaw in The Wireless Lady by Peter Tinniswood.
I'm very fond of burrowing animals. I seem to have an affinity with them. Many, many moons ago, I went up for a part in Coronation Street. I didn't get it. They said my feet were too big. Pity. It could have been an inroad. I just had this letter from a producer, BBC Wireless. What he wants is... Well, I might as well read it to you. Let my specs do some work for a change instead of loafing around on the end of my nose. This is what it says in purple ink. Dear Winifred Leslie, it is a long time since you appeared on radio, scandalously long, if I may be permitted to offer my humble opinion. Accordingly, I've taken the liberty of writing to you enclosing a script, which I should be delighted and honoured if you would consider performing. I might add that I've been an ardent admirer of yours for many years and can say, without fear of contradiction, that you are one of radio's all-time greats. I await your reply with eager anticipation. Our milkman's the spitting image of Stinker Murdoch. He used to wear chukka boots. I wonder what his wife gives him for breakfast. Nothing, I suppose. Thus is the fate of your average milkman. Chekhov. I love that thing in the plays of Chekhov on the wireless. Mind you, I wasn't one to turn my nose up at George Formby. Oh, no. I did 3 films with George Formby. Oh, yes. I had the distinction of being the first female actress ever to ride pillion to George Formby's motorbike. He was wearing goggles at the time. Mean little man he was. All brill cream and damp teeth. Turned out nice again, he used to say. I'll say it did. For him it always turned out nice. Don't let that gormless grin fool you. I was up all night with my leg. You know what? I could just fancy a fresh grapefruit. This producer chappie, I can't read his name, you know. In my day, producers for the wireless always used to write in navy blue ink with a genuine fountain pen. It was considered an essential part of the job. I wonder if he's fond of cats. I wonder if... Do you know the first time I appeared on the wireless? I'll tell you. December the 21st, 1936. I was wearing a very expensive tailored suit in maroon and grey houndstooth. I played the part of this woman who kept getting flustered. Oh, now, look here, my man. I seem to have lost my beret. I know it was in my possession on arrival here on Platform 3 at Marylebone Station, where I have recently arrived following a rail trip to the Chilterns. But since then, despite my best endeavours, I have been unable to locate it. However, old rat wants shooting. Still, it made an inroad. I wonder what Chekhov did for a living when he wasn't writing. I bet it was something to do with forests. I don't know why, but when I did his plays on the wireless, I always visualized him as having a hacking cough. It's got a good feel to it, is this script. It's nice and heavy. Substantial. I should think it weighs a good 45 minutes. When I was in my prime on the wireless, I could pick up a script and just by the feel of it in my hand, I could tell you whether it was any good or not. Didn't have to read it. I just had to weigh it. Not bad. Puts me in mind of Dodie Smith. Do you know the last time I appeared on the wireless? I'll tell you. December the 24th, 1994. Christmas Eve, if my memory serves me correct. I was taking part in this panel game. They had 4 celebrities. I was one of them. And you each had to tell a story. Then you had to guess the one whose story was false. Do you want to know what my story was? I'll tell you. It was about my first husband, Anatole. He claimed he'd got Russian blood in him, did Anatole? But I knew for a fact he came from Prestatyn. I want to play Panto in Prestatyn. Jack and the Beanstalk. Was it Little Red Riding Hood? Who cares? I didn't at Prestatyn. I'll tell you who played Dame. Thing. Well, you know. What's his name? Oh, dear. I just can't remember names these days. I'm the founder member of Craft. C-R-A-F-T. can't remember a flipping thing. What was I talking about? Oh, I know. My story on the wireless about Anatole. I tell you, in normal circumstances, I wouldn't have dreamt of doing that show. But they offered to send a car, and I thought, you never know. It might make an inroad. Anyway, that doesn't concern you. What concerns you is what I told the listeners, and it went like this. The story I'm about to tell you, listeners, is about my first husband, Anatole, and the events of our honeymoon night. I'd only known Anatole 3 days before we got married. I was playing pantomime in Paignton, Mother Goose, dreadful costumes. I think they must have got them as a job lot from a boys' brigade jumble sale. Anyway, one night, Anatole came to my dressing room with a bottle of whiskey. He drank it all himself, every single drop of it. The outshot was, 3 days later, we got married in the official registry office in Rugeley, and Anatole hired a chauffeur-driven limousine to take us to a select family hotel in Ambleside to spend our honeymoon night. I couldn't take my eyes off the chauffeur. He was very tall and very blonde. He was almost albino, with these prominent pink eyelids and skin as white as a hangman's lampshade. Anatole drank a whole bottle of whiskey and a quarter of a bottle of rum, and then we went to bed. We were just about to get cracking when suddenly the door burst open, and who should stride in but the chauffeur? I couldn't help noticing him. He was stark naked, except for a black eye patch studded with sequins over his private parts, and he was holding a revolver. He pointed it straight at Anatole and pulled the trigger. It clicked, but nothing happened. And with that, Anatole hurled himself out of the window. 2 stories up we were. When I visited him in hospital the following day, I said to him, Anatole, what was the chauffeur doing in our bedroom last night? He looked at me straight in the eyes and he said he was jealous. Jealous, I said. Why? He looked at me with his curdling navy blue eyes and he said he's jealous because he's my boyfriend. Well, the audience loved it. They did. They adored it. They rocked with laughter. They did. They howled. They were in pleats. But it was true. Oh, yes. The story was completely true. But no one twigged it. They all thought it was Thing with his mouthful of teeth was fibbing. Do you like Harold Pinter? I don't. I can't fathom him out. They once offered me a part in one of his plays on the wireless. I said, I'm not doing that. I've got more pauses than I've got dialogue, I said. Funny little man. He bears all the hallmarks of someone who can't decide whether to splash out on a new garden shed. I'd love to go on a cruise to the Baltic. They say it's very clean. I love my wireless. It's an antique, is my wireless. I bought it as new from Kendall Mills in Deansgate, Manchester, after a somewhat bibulous lunch with Violet Carson. Shortly after that, Hitler bombed the docks. It's been a great comfort to me as this wireless. I don't know what I'd have done without it. Morning, wireless.
Morning.
How are you keeping?
Nicely, thanks. How's yourself?
Looking through this script he sent me, it looks like a good part. I've only read up to page 9 and I'm still the only one who's spoken. Maybe it's a one-hander. Very nice. If I decided to do it, it could make a real inroad. I mean to say, I could get my picture on the front cover of the Radio Times, move over Franklin Engelman. I'm so lonely. I'm so dreadfully lonely. What's the point of fame when you're as lonely as a curlew? I had a dog once, a Pomeranian, but then she went and died on me. Isn't that typical of dogs? There's no escape from loneliness. The rich and the famous, they suffer just as much from it as the poor and the infirm. The democracy of the lonely. They came like swallows, and like swallows went, And yet a woman's powerful character could keep a swallow to its first intent. And half a dozen information there that seemed to whir upon a compass point found certainty upon the dreaming air. W.B. Yeats, he was Irish. Hello, Wireless.
Hello.
Everything all right?
Yes, thank you. Fine.
I don't get invited to the parties now. I used to go to all the BBC parties at Xmas. I was a permanent fixture. Then Thing took over, and I haven't had a sniff since. You feel it, you know. You really feel it when you're not wanted. It wounds you when no one cares. Everything you've done in the past, all the good work you've turned in for them, all the honours you've brought to them, gone. As though it never happened. You're old. You're not young. You're not promising. They can't mould you, so they don't want you. I haven't been to a party at the BBC for a good 3 years. More. I haven't been to one for 5 years, at the very least. I wrote a letter of complaint to feedback. Nothing happened. They don't want to know you when you're old. They turn their backs on you if they think you're lonely. They don't want it to rub off on them, you see. Life must go on. And our life will go on. We shall live through a long succession of days and endless evenings. We shall bear patiently the trials fate has in store for us. And when our time comes, we shall die without complaining. Anton Chekhov, he was Russian. After Anatole died, through wounds sustained on his honeymoon night, I married Rex. Rex Frobisher. He was an actor. Well, with a name like that, he couldn't be anything else, could he? He claimed to have famous naval antecedents, but I took that with a pinch of salt. He had a toothbrush moustache, and he wore mohair suits and suede shoes. He had a high-pitched voice, and he always wore expensive perfume about his person. But he wasn't one of them. He wasn't a homo. Far from it. He was very demanding on that front, was Rex. When we were doing the Master Builder at Sheffield, he reckoned he could have me 3 times, provided I got a move on during Act 3. Mind you, he was useless in Hedda Gabler. Dear, oh dear, this flat, it's a positive dust harbourer. I don't know where it comes from, this dust. It's all over the wireless. You can hardly read the names on the dial for dust. Hilverstone, Daventry, Deutwich, Athlone, Sutton's. I wonder where Sutton's is. You don't know where Sutton's is by any chance, do you? Wireless?
No, haven't a clue.
A faint voice, at loudest. It slowly ebbs till almost out of hearing, then slowly back to faint full. At each slow ebb, hope slowly dawns that it is dying. He must know it will flow again. And yet at each slow ebb, hope slowly dawns that it is dying. Samuel Beckett. The roommate of my soul. He was Irish. I was in that show once. He interviewed me. Thing. The one with the plummy voice and the condescending socks. Full of himself, he was. He'd have thought he'd invented the wireless all on his own, single-handed. I soon put him in his place. Would you be able to build yourself a shelter, Miss Leslie, he said. Talk sense, man, I said. Talk sense. If it's a desert island, it means there's nothing on it. It's axiomatic, is that? If you want to stick me on an island to see if I can build myself a shelter, then you'd better put me on an island that's got decent tree cover. You should have seen his face. It looked as though it had been sat upon by a dromedary, and he didn't know where to put his legs in his casual slacks. That's when I went for the jugular.
What you've perpetrated is a misnomer, I said. You should have called your program Tropical Island Discs, I said. Then you'd have been getting somewhere. You'd have all the coconuts you needed for self-sufficiency, and you'd have ample supplies of thatching material. He didn't say a word. He just looked at me with his plummy voice and fiddled with his expensive shaving rash. They didn't put the program out. Technical hitch, they said. Rubbish. I don't think they liked the music I chose. He said to me, thing, with the plummy voice, he said, "We normally have 8 different tunes, Miss Leslie," he said. "You've chosen the same one 8 times." You should have seen the way I bristled. "And what's wrong with the national anthem," I said? "Or is it the theatre organ you object to?" "Well, let me tell you," I said. "Reginald Ford happens to be a personal friend of mine. I've looked after his cat umpteen times." He didn't know where to put himself. I wonder what happened to him. Probably the same thing that happened to George Mellacrino. I never got to my mother's funeral. I was playing Grimsby at the time. Panto, Dick Whittington. They wouldn't give me time off. That's where the wireless comes into its own, you see. If you're acting on the wireless, they'll always give you time off to go to a funeral. This flat's far too big for me. It's like living in a furniture repository. I've been a total stranger here since Aubrey died. We used to have people round for drinks on Sunday evenings after we'd finished recording. Aubrey'd be scudding round in his pinny, handing round cocktail onions and maids of honour. Of course, in the old days, you did it live. You did everything live then. Eating, drinking, making love. You did it live. Not like nowadays, when you can always do it again if you make a muck-up of things first time. We had them all round here at one time or another. All the greats of the wireless. Pearl Hackney. Charlie Shadwell, Griselda Harvey. Griselda Harvey. Oh, I had such a soft spot for Griselda Harvey.
So did I.
Did you, wireless?
Yes.
Bless you. I don't know where I'm going. I don't seem to have any purpose in life. I'm all at sea. In the good old days, I knew precisely what I was about. From opening my eyes first thing in the morning to closing them in the early hours, when Aubrey was curled up alongside me in bed like a slug on a damp slate. I knew precisely what my status was in life. I was famous. I was loved. The whole nation adored me. It did. I was a household name. I was a national institution. And do you know why? I'll tell you. It's because I'm just an ordinary person. That's been the secret of my success, my ordinariness. I'm just like everyone else, and people identify with that. I don't put on airs and graces. I don't claim special favours in the queue at the fishmongers. I don't go to Monte Carlo at Christmas. I wouldn't be seen dead on the QE2. I've led an ordinary life, despite all my fame and all my talents. That's why people love me so much. They love me because they know that I love them.
Rubbish.
What? What's that you say, wireless?
Nothing.
Bless you. Father was a shunter on the railways. Crew. LMS. London, Midland, Scottish. Mother ran a wool shop. She was a very refined lady, was Mother. Everything had to be just so. She always had doilies on a Sunday. She never let Father keep his bicycle in the hall. He had to take it round the back. Her eldest brother had made a fortune from soft drinks. He started off in his backyard making homemade cordials. He'd gone from house to house, selling them in stone jugs from his horse and cart. Mother had kept house for him. When he made his fortune, he married into the gentry. They'd no use for Mother then. He cast her out of the house. He went to live in a mansion on the Wirral,
and mother married father and went to live in a terrace cottage downwind of the marshalling yards. I loved the marshalling yards. In the winter, they lit up the frost on my bedroom window. You could hear the couplings clanking and clattering. You could hear the huff and the puff of the locos and their snarls. And I'd think of father out there, muffled up against the cold, with his shunter's pole and his lamp swinging from a hook on his leather belt. He was a lovely man, was my father. He was a union official, only minor. But mother used to chastise him for it. Why, she'd say, why put yourself at risk? Oh, you never know, he'd say. It might lead to an inroad. It never did. He died unfulfilled, did my father. He always wanted to follow in the footsteps of Lawrence of Arabia. But in those days, there wasn't much call for that sort of thing in crew. He used to read me great chunks of the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, did father. And when he did, there was a lilt in his voice and a sparkle in his eyes. He made you visualize everything. The heat of the desert, the grunts of the camels, the whoops of the warriors, the smells, the sighs, the screams, the locos slowly toppling from the rails and shrieking out its steam. Oh, he was a lovely man, was my father. I was ever so sad the day he died.
You weren't there.
I was.
No, you weren't. You were in Rusholme.
So I was. Panto, Puss in Boots. It wasn't my fault. They wouldn't give me the time off. As a decrepit father takes delight to see his active child do deeds of youth, so I, made lame by fortune's dearest spite, take comfort of my worth and truth. For whether beauty, birth, or wealth, or wit, or any of these all, or more, entitled in their parts to crowned sit, I make my love engrafted to this store. William Shakespeare. He was English. About this script. There's some very strong language in it, you know. I don't think listeners like strong language on the wireless. I mean, everyone has to fart from time to time, but is there any need to make a meal of it on the wireless? Farting belongs to real life. Who wants real life on the wireless? What you need on the wireless is something that takes you out of yourself. Real life doesn't do that. You never have to use your imagination in real life. You do on the wireless. That's the beauty of it. The wireless opens up the imagination. You do, don't you, wireless?
When I'm in the mood.
Say something now. Make me use my imagination. Please. Wireless, please. Blast my imagination. Plunder it. Thrill it and send it soaring.
Right. Let's see. Here we go. Today is the birthday of His Royal Highness, Prince Charles. We wish His Royal Highness many happy returns.
Rex ran off with a lady trombonist from Whitstable. Goodness knows where they met. I mean, it's not every day of the week you bump into a person who hails from Whitstable. He left me this note at Broadcasting House. I was performing in a play, Dear Octopus. That's when Aubrey came into my life, after Rex ran off with a lady musician from the Kent coast. He was a maintenance man in Broadcasting House, was Aubrey. I met him in 1953, lower basement, Studio 6, Lysistrata. He was repairing the radiator in the green room,
It was love at first sight. "I hope I'm not making too much noise," he said. "No, not for me, you're not," I said. "Mind you, I can't speak for the others." He smiled at me. "Would you like a Malteser?" I said. "Oh, smashing, thank you very much," he said. "Just what I wanted." I think it must have been the Malteser that made the first inroad. He gave it a good suck. Later on, I was to discover he gave everything a good suck. It was a long courtship, was my courtship with Aubrey. We wanted to be sure, you see. We didn't want people turning up their noses. We didn't want people saying she's married beneath her. We didn't want people looking at Aubrey and saying, "Poor little thing, you'll never cope." The first time we made love together, Aubrey said, "I can't believe it. I've heard you so many times on the wireless. And now here we are, in Grange over Sands, engaged in mutual congress. And I'm hearing you in person. This performance is just for me. Me alone. Nobody else." I took his feet off the bedside table and I said, "Well, Aubrey, that's the beauty of the wireless, isn't it? Whatever you're doing, you can always embellish it by using your imagination." "Is that what you're doing now, Winifred?" he said. "Oh, yes," I said. "Not half." We waited till his brother came home on leave from Nyasaland and then we got married. I was doing the master builder on the wireless for the BBC World Service. I was given away by Knut Brovik. We had the reception in the BBC club. They were all there, all the greats. Big Bill Campbell and his Rocky Mountain Rhythm, Alvar Liddell, Tommy Handley, Jack Train. "I don't mind if I do, sir." Oh, I loved it, Ma, when it was on the wireless. "Can I do you now, sir?" Christmas Day, 1986. That was the first time Aubrey filled his trousers. We'd just finished the goose and I said, "Phew, what a funny smell." Aubrey lowered his head and he said very quietly, "It's me. I've had an accident." I took him straight round to the doctor when he opened up the surgery after the festive season. He prodded him and poked him and sent him for tests. And then he told him he'd only got 6 months to live. Isn't that typical of doctors? He lasted another 6 years, did my Aubrey. They were the happiest years of my life.
They weren't for him.
I beg your pardon? What did you say? What did you say? I'm asking you. What did you say? There. See what you made me do? I smashed the teapot. It was Mother's. She used to make tea in it. It's got potential as this script. I could really make something of it. It's something to get my teeth into. It could be my big chance, could this play? My comeback. My triumphant return. And why not? I've still got plenty to give. I've still got all my marbles intact. I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm keen. I know the ropes inside out. I wouldn't turn up late for rehearsal. I wouldn't wear jewellery that jingles when I'm in front of the mic. I wouldn't rustle my script. I wouldn't pop. I'm wireless, I am. Wireless, through and through. Why should me and the wireless roll over on our backs and give up the ghost? There's still life left in us. We'll fight, that's what we'll do. We'll fight the bastards. Give up. But it's all given up. It's nothing new. I'm nothing new. Ah, so there was something once. I had something once. It may be thought there was, so long as it's known there was not ever anything but giving up. But let us suppose there was not. That is to say, let us suppose there was something once. in a head, in a heart, before all empties, shut again and froze. This is most reassuring and emboldens me to go on once again. Mr. Beckett, my beloved Sam.
She's sleeping.
I'm worn out.
It's only 10:30.
I know. I'm getting old.
So am I.
Oh, no. Not you. You'll never grow old, my friend. Never, never, never.
Clenched tight in her sleep, she is. So tiny. A face like a walnut. Sharp elbows. Flat chest.
I'm no old painting, am I?
No. If they'd hang you for being beautiful, you'd have died innocent.
So what is it, then? What is my secret? What is it I've got? Well, come on. What is it I've got?
That certain something.
That's it. That's it. I've got that certain something. Oh, you are kind, Wireless. You're bringing me out in goose lumps. Freddie Griswood used to do that when he read the shipping forecast. I had a lover, Ferdy. That was his name, Ferdy. He was so handsome. He was handsome in that continental way you used to see in British films after the war when Bonacalino Jr. wasn't in them. Do you remember that type of man? They used to say this and that and smoke Turkish cigarettes in their dressing gowns. He wasn't in the business, wasn't Ferdy? I think he was more like a drone by profession. He told me he drove racing cars, but I never saw any evidence to substantiate that claim. His clothes were always immaculate, impeccable, and so was his body when he got undressed. He had a scar under his left arm where he'd been gored by a fighting bull in Spain. I remember as well as anything the first time he got undressed in my presence. I'd been to a party. The last night of Boeing Boeing. At least I think it was Boeing Boeing. Thing was in it, that I do know. After the show, we all went to this party. Aubrey wasn't there. He was back here in the flat nursing his chest. I only meant to go for a couple of minutes or so. But when the fog closed in, it was a real pea super. You couldn't see a fist in front of you. "You'll all have to stay the night," said our host. Well, there was the usual dirty laughter and assorted ribaldries, and I thought to myself, oh, jigger, what am I going to do now? Aubrey will be worried sick, and with the phone on the blink, there's absolutely no way of informing him of my predicament. That was when Ferdy stepped in. I'd seen him in the background, eyeing me up, appraising me more like. I knew instinctively that he liked what he saw. He came up to me. And he bowed in that continental way of his, and he took hold of my hand, and he kissed it, and he said, "Mademoiselle, I have an appartement not 3 minutes' walk from here. I would consider it the greatest honor if you would avail yourself of it." And I did. I availed myself of it. It was a beautiful apartment, exquisite. He had this bamboo cage full of tropical birds. There was an indoor pond sunk in the marble floor of the lobby, and the floor of his bedroom was carpeted with furs. We lay on the furs and we made love. Oh, he was wonderful, was Ferdy. So daring, so inventive, so passionate, so gentle. And his body glistened. Every part of his lovely, lustrous, languid body glistened.
Rubbish.
What?
It's a load of old rubbish. You never had a lover.
I did.
You didn't.
I did. In my imagination. He was a producer, was Ferdy.
Oh, no. He came from Stalybridge.
He gave me my first big break on the wireless.
I know. The Women of Troy. Euripides.
He came from Greece, did Euripides?
I know.
I couldn't make head nor tail of it. I didn't know what was going on. Well, I'd just done a cameo part in Meet the Huggets, and that's hardly an adequate reparation for Greek tragedy, even though Jack Warner was kindness personified to me in the canteen. I didn't go a bundle on Petula Clark, though. I kept tripping over her.
Courage, my dears. The moment we have dreaded is now come.
Each of you is assigned to a separate master, not all to one.
Tell us our luck. Who is to have my poor Cassandra?
Agamemnon. He chose her specially.
But how? As a slave to attend his wife?
No. For his own bed. She is to be his concubine.
I'd love to have been Ferdy's concubine. But it wasn't possible. He had his aged mother to contend with. So I made do with my imagination. That's how I coped with my lonely, blighted passion for Victor Sylvester. I'm glad I never had children of my own. It was more than enough for me having them on the wireless. Auntie Vi, Auntie Muriel. Fine, all well and good. But who remembers Auntie Winifred? I do. I was Auntie Winifred for 3 years solid on the BBC Home Service. God alone knows how many miles I tramped with Romany. Oh, look, Romany, I'd say. What is that small finch-shaped bird with a distinctive orange-buff breast, black head and mantle, and conspicuous white rump? That is the brambling, Auntie Winifred, he'd say. It is the northern equivalent of our chaffinch. Fancy, I'd say. Just fancy that, Romany. And all the time I wanted to disembowel him. I couldn't stand the man. He smelt of sheep. It's cold. I must get that man to attend to the draft excluders. Wireless?
Yes.
Say something to me.
What?
Anything. Something that you think I like. Something significant. Something typical of you in all your glory.
Right then, here we go. Today is the anniversary of the death of Her Majesty Queen Victoria. We wish Her Majesty many happy returns.
I'm peeling a tangerine. I'm portioning it. One portion for me, one portion for Mother, one for Father, one for Anatole, one for Rex, one for Aubrey. I'm portioning out my world. At least, what's left of it. When did I start to go out of fashion? It wasn't all of a sudden. It was bit by bit. People started to leave. Ferdy died. The fat man with the beard left because they wouldn't let him smoke in his office. They brought in new people. Nothing wrong with that. I was a new person once. The trouble was, these new people didn't want to know. They didn't want to know me, and they certainly didn't want to know you, Wireless.
They were frightened of us.
Terrified.
Petrified. We play the sound of other people's voices, not their voice. They do not understand that.
How sad. How very, very sad. Who is it climbs the summit of the road? Only the beggar bumming his dark load. Who was it cried to see the falling star? Only the landless soldier lost in war. And did 1,000 years go by in vain? And does 1,000 start again? Alan Lewis. He was a Welshman. There don't seem to be many sound effects in this script he sent me. Good. I've never been all that partial to sound effects. I think they intrude, don't you, Wireless?
Yes. They get in the way.
What's that?
A sound effect.
No, it isn't. There's someone in the flat. Outside, in the hall. There's someone there.
What are you talking about, woman? It's a sound effect.
It isn't. There's someone there. I'm going to see.
That's right. How are you keeping?
Nicely, thank you, Aubrey. And you?
In the pink, Winifred. Can I come in?
Of course you can, Aubrey. But wipe your feet, love.
Right.
That's it, Aubrey. That's it, love. Right then. Come into the lounge.
Would you like something to drink, Aubrey?
Yes, please.
Right then, love. I'll mix you your favourite.
Excuse me, Winifred.
Yes, Aubrey? What is it?
I don't like sound effects with my whiskey.
Of course you don't, Aubrey. How remiss of me to forget. There you are, Aubrey. One whiskey.
Thank you. I saw Anatole yesterday.
Did you really, Aubrey? And how was he?
Dead. I saw Rex and Ferdy, too.
And how are they?
Same as Anatole. Same as me. I told them I was coming to see you.
Did you really, Aubrey? How lovely. And what did they say? Did they give you any message for me?
Yes.
What?
This.
I feel rather strange. I feel most peculiar. I wonder if I'm sickening for something. I've been feeling very liverish recently. Light-headed, too. I've got this funny feeling. It's as though I'm standing apart from my body and I'm looking down on myself. Do you know what I mean, Wireless? Can you imagine it? Can you, love? Can you?
I loved a man whose name was Tom. He was strong as a bear and 2 yards long. I loved a man whose name was Dick. He was big as a barrel and 3 feet thick. And I loved a man whose name was Harry, 6 feet tall and sweet as a cherry. But the one I loved best, awake or asleep, is little Willie Wee, and he's 6 feet deep.
I should have had a narrator in my life. I always wanted one.
Someone to guide me. Someone to chastise me and praise me. Someone to loathe me. Someone to love me. Someone to explain my life to me. Goodness me, it's dark outside. It's night. Whatever's happened to the time? Time's gone by and I've just not noticed. What's happening? What's going on?
Listen. It is night, moving in the streets. You can hear the dew falling and the hushed town breathing.
Yes.
Time passes. Listen. Time passes. Come closer now. Only you can hear the houses sleeping in the streets in the slow, deep, silent, black, bandaged night. Only your eyes are unclosed to see the black and folded town fast and slow asleep.
Yes.
Listen. Only you can hear and see behind the eyes of the sleepers the movements and countries and mazes and colors and dismays and rainbows and tunes and wishes and flight and fall and despairs and big seas of their dreams.
Yes.
Look. Only you can see the terraced, humpbacked, sly, jiggered cottages and the cobbles and the gas lamps hiss.
Yes.
There's a small girl running down the back jigger. She's tiny. Her face is pinched. Her legs are thin. Her eyes are hard. Her mouth is mean. Can you see her?
Yes.
Who is it?
It's me.
Yes, it's you. And what are you doing?
Climbing onto my father's knee.
Yes. And what are you doing now?
Slapping his face.
That's right. Correct. And now what are you doing?
I'm pulling his hair. And I'm tugging at the corner of his eyes. I'm trying to open them. But they won't. They won't. I tug, but I can't open his eyes. They won't open. They won't. I didn't get to Father's funeral.
You didn't get to your mother's?
I know.
You didn't get to Anatole's?
I feel most peculiar. I think I'll make myself a pot of tea.
Don't.
What?
Stay where you are.
Right.
Poor Aubrey.
Yes.
His last 6 years were a misery, weren't they? They were a misery, weren't they?
Yes.
He just faded away, didn't he?
Yes.
And you ignored him.
Yes.
You'd come home in the evening from the studios and you'd pour yourself a stiff drink and you'd throw off your shoes and you'd curl up on the sofa and you'd smile and you'd smirk and you'd gloat over the triumphs of the day. The bollockings you'd dished out, the wounds you'd inflicted, the hurt you'd caused, the misery and the fear.
Yes.
And he was lying in the bedroom and you wouldn't go near him. You wouldn't say a word to him.
No.
And then... other times. Other times, Winifred. What happened then?
You make me sick. What use are you? What good are you? What do you contribute?
I'm ill, Winifred. I'm poorly.
You're always poorly, Aubrey. You should have died when the doctor told you. 6 months, he said, you've got to live. 6 months, Aubrey. And that was 5.5 years ago. Why couldn't you have done as you were told? Why couldn't you have obeyed orders?
I'm sorry, Winifred.
Sorry? It's too late to be sorry now. You've ruined my life, you have. You've destroyed it for me. I could have had a marvellous life if you hadn't been dragging me down. I could have been married to Ferdy. I could have been his concubine. I could have been anyone's concubine if you hadn't been in the way. They all wanted me. They all made propositions to me. All the greats. Gilly Potter, Professor Joad, Wilfred Pickles, Carol Levis, Claude Hulbert, John Snagg, Basil Bradford, Laidman Brown, Bill Sowerbutts, Edmundo Ross. You name them, they wanted me. Semprini was besotted with me.
I came home one night and he was dead.
I know.
He'd taken all his pills and drunk 3/4 of a bottle of whiskey.
Yes.
I've been recording in Maida Vale.
Yes.
My last role on the wireless.
I know.
My dog eats nuts.
Chekhov.
I know. I haven't any proper identity papers. I don't know how old I am, and I always think of myself as a young girl. When I was little, father and mother used to go on tour around all the fairs giving performances, and very good ones, too. I used to do the dive of death and lots of other tricks. When father and mother died, a German lady adopted me and began educating me. Well, I grew up and became a governess. But where I come from and what I am, I have no idea. Who my parents are, I don't know either. Very likely they weren't even married. I don't know anything. I'm longing for someone to talk to, but there isn't anyone. I'm alone in the world. Chekhov. He was Russian. I'm all alone, aren't I, Wireless? I came home from Maida Vale and he was dead. My last part on the wireless. Nothing since. I'm all alone. Hello out there. Hello, listeners. Who are you? What are you doing? I can see you, you know. Oh, yes, I can see every single one of you. I can see into your hearts. I can see into your imaginations. The fishing boat bobbing sea. The snatch of the woodman's axe. The loco's spit and hiss. The snow-sleeked mountains. The tangerine dismembered portion by portion. Portion by portion. My dog eats nuts. Wireless?
Yes?
Say something to me. Say something warm. Say something loving. Say something to stir this cold, bleak shell of my heart.
Right. Today is the birthday of Winifred Constance Irene Leslie. We wish Miss Leslie many happy returns.
Postman's riding his bike on the pavement. The lollipop man's got a dewdrop on the end of his nose. I feel ever so much better. I've cleared the air, do you know what I mean? It's as though I've purged myself, do you know what I mean? You know when you've been constipated and they give you a good dose of Gregory powder and you... I'm going to ring that producer at the BBC. I'll ring him at his office, direct, person to person. I'll say to him... Hello, this is Winifred Leslie speaking. I've received the script you so kindly sent me for my perusal, and I've perused it. And with one or two slight exceptions, I think it's got the makings. Now, what I suggest is this. You invite me out to lunch with wine and explain to me your feelings regarding the script. And I'll put my point to you, and if we can come to some agreement, well, I might consider playing the role. I don't want to commit myself. Well, I'm a very busy woman, as you can well imagine. There's so many offers in the pipeline, I can't begin to tell you. I'm so much in demand, you see. Mind you, having said that, I do think the script has got possibilities. I'm not familiar with the name of the person who wrote it. Has he done much before on the wireless? It doesn't seem like it. Wireless?
Yes.
I'll do it.
Good.
It's got a lovely feel to it, is this script. Substantial. It could plug up the gaps in the schedules. It could make quite an inroad. Page one. I'll read it out loud. I'll see what it sounds like. Here we go, then. Page one. Speech one. I'm very fond of burrowing animals. I seem to have an affinity with them. Many moons ago, I went up for a part in Coronation Street. I didn't get it. They said my feet were too big. Pity. It could have been an inroad. I've just had this letter from a producer. BBC. Wireless. What he wants is... Well, I might as well read it to you. Dear Winifred Leslie, it is a long time since you appeared on radio, scandalously long, if I may be permitted to offer my humble opinion. Accordingly, I've taken the liberty of writing. My dog eats nuts.
In The Wireless Lady by Peter Tinniswood, Winifred Leslie was played by Billy Whitelaw, and The Wireless by Christian Rodska. The Wireless Lady was directed at Christchurch Studio Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.